news and more, including state-by-state reports on the nation's premier youth organization. This is FFA Today on Rural Radio 147.
Hello and welcome to this week's FFA Today. I'm your host, Janet Adkison. And just a quick, potentially money-saving reminder for you. If you've booked housing within the block for the 92nd National FFA Convention, you have until this coming Monday, August 5th, to cancel the reserved rooms with no penalty. After August 5th, any canceled reserved room will incur a one-night plus tax fee. You can visit the convention housing webpage at convention.ffa.org and click Planning for additional information. Now, a few years ago, the Wanee School District in Indiana set out to remodel and expand Northwood High School. The renovation, which finished in late 2018, became known as the Panther Project and included remodeled rooms for agriculture and FFA classes, including small engines and veterinary science. In this segment from the Northwood Yearbook, the school's FFA advisor, Mrs. Amy Beer, discusses what makes the new space better than the old rooms and how it's improved the students' learning experience.
We've gone from where Mr. Hummel is across the road, we've almost tripled our space. And we're now able to do just classroom work in here, where my FFA kids with their projects can be now separated into other rooms, and we're not all on top of each other. The space is by far incredibly helpful. The lab areas, the kids can work on projects, and we just are able to move around without being on top of each other. There has been some variety of labs that I just didn't have, like these tables are a little more sturdy and the tables are a little better than what I had in the past. And we can do, I guess, with the different classes I teach, I have four different classes that I teach, we can have multiple labs going on at one time in all four classes. Whereas in the other classroom, I'd have to time my labs out so only one was going on at a time. So the classes now can work simultaneously and I don't have any space constraints. The main thing that they did in this room was to put the glass into my office space. So it allows my students to go in there and work on smaller projects and it's easy to see, it can be quiet. That was a major renovation. And we have a small engines room that used to be the old jewelry room, and that received new tools and toolboxes for the students on our small engines teams. A lot of the activities and the things we do, we now have display cases that we can show some of the projects the kids are working on. The kids have settled really well into the space. They really appreciate and enjoy. I don't know if people would see that, but they see that it's just really beneficial for us to have the space in this area.
And from Indiana, we move to another state with tons of FFA pride, Oklahoma. Employees at Public Service Company of Oklahoma, many of them FFA alumni, share what the organization means to them personally and how they continue to support it.
I love FFA. It's been a big part of my life.
FFA taught me so much that applies to life today.
I didn't realize it at the time, but being in the FFA has really paid off.
FFA was really about leadership and leadership skills.
PSO has been serving Oklahoma since 1913. We provide power to 1.2 million Oklahomans in 232 cities and towns. Many of our team members were either an FFA themselves or are the parent of an FFA student. They have firsthand knowledge of the values, work ethic, and passion to serve fostered by FFA.
I showed animals, did all the different leadership opportunities. I was very into FFA. I was a recipient of the American Farmer degree, the highest degree that you can get in FFA.
FFA taught me hard work and responsibility. It is laying a very solid foundation for you. You're going to have that work ethic, and you're building a network of people you can pull on for years to come.
It's about leadership. It's about public speaking.
I was a member of the BEGS chapter of the FFA, and PSO is very interested in placing our support around things that can grow academics and leadership. I can't think of a better organization.
It's an incredible organization. I'm thrilled that my daughter's a part of it, and I'm thrilled that my company sees the value in FFA.
It makes a lot of sense that PSO cares about FFA.
PSO's core values align with the values of FFA.
FFA is developing future leaders, and I am really incredibly grateful to work for a company that sees value in that.
I am super proud to work for a company that supports FFA.
At PSO, we recognize and believe in the same values FFA instills in its members. We congratulate you for your involvement in this great organization. You are our future leaders, and we look forward to you achieving great things.
Well, don't go anywhere because we're headed to the Lone Star State. That's coming up next, right here on FFA Today. Welcome back to the show. And last week, we brought you a taste of the action from the 91st Texas FFA State Convention. This week, video blogger Daniel Stanton catches up with the association's executive director, Austin Large, to learn about what it takes to preside over FFA in a state where almost one-sixth of all members call home.
Hey, everyone. Fun day for me. Get to spend some time with Austin Large.
Yes, right? Sir. Yeah.
The executive director of Texas FFA, right?
That's me. Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah. So how long have you been at this position?
So I've been the executive director for the last 2 years. I started February of 2017, but previously worked for the association as a leadership development coordinator a few years ago from 2012 to 2014.
Right.
So about 6 years in total with the association, but definitely been in ag education my entire career.
Right. So you're originally from California.
Born and raised. Yes, sir. Don't hold it against me. I got here as soon as I could.
That's right.
I had all my vaccinations. I was dipped at the border. So all yeah. is well.
Yeah. And have you learned to say y'all yet?
I say y'all frequently.
Frequently.
All y'all. Yeah. I've got all the different stages of it. So
what exactly does this executive director do?
Sure. Yeah. So the Texas FFA is the largest youth leadership organization in the state of Texas. So we have 129,000 student members. And our role as an association is to develop student potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success. As the executive director, my job is to make sure that we do that and accomplish our mission. So I work with a team of people here in Austin, and we facilitate leadership development experiences for students, provide competitive event opportunities, award scholarships, recognize students for their accomplishments, and try to assist those local advisors in achieving that mission daily with their students.
Right.
So my role is about staff management. I manage a team of ladies that do some of the best work in the business. I make sure that we are a true nonprofit association, and so I manage our financials along with our team, and then kind of set the course and direction for our programming.
Okay, so with that, what does a typical week or month look like for you?
Yeah, it really depends on when you come to visit.
Yes.
So right now, teachers just wrapped up, so there's been a lot of time out of class. I'm traveling and conducting site visits at our new FFA chapters and rechartered FFA chapters.
Right.
And so there's a lot of travel and dealing with those instances. Summer's all convention all the time.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, we're just looking at membership services. So getting the rosters done and getting our new members acclimated to our programs. And focusing on our leadership development event. So it really depends on when you come to see me. That'll dictate what I'm doing at that day and time.
I know the FFA was huge in my life.
Yeah.
And the scholarships I got allowed me to go to Texas Tech and pay for that and get my degree. How much money and scholarships and that does the Texas FFA facilitate?
Yeah, so thanks to the hard work of our foundation staff and our generous donors and partners, we're able to give about $2.3 million in academic and award scholarships each and every year to our FFA members.
Isn't that crazy?
It blows my mind. Being from California, that's not something that I was able to participate in
right.
when I was an FFA member, just because we didn't have the sheer amount of support that Texas FFA members do. And so it's great that, you know, at convention, we'll give away that money for our award winners and scholarship winners. And it's something that makes me really proud that we're able to do for our students, because they invest a lot in our program. And I'm glad that our program and our supporters can invest a lot back in them.
So leading a nonprofit this large and having advisors and students
yeah.
and foundation, which is a large, you know, what prepared you to do that? Like, how did you, if someone was looking to do that, because it's not just Texas FFA and any nonprofit,
yeah,
what would you suggest to them?
Gosh, that's a great question. Sometimes I'm like, am I even qualified to do this job? But ag education has been my career. So I think if you're in the nonprofit sector, you have to have a passion for the work that you do. And so I'm a product of agricultural education. I was an FFA member. I taught high school agriculture for 5 years before I transitioned into a state staff and even a national FFA staff role. And so I think at the heart of what you do if you work in the nonprofit sector, you have to have a passion for your work. Mm-hmm. It's been a huge learning curve for me on the financial side. And so you just have to surround yourself with people who know what the heck they're doing. And so luckily our foundation board has a tremendous wealth of knowledge in terms of financial and fiduciary management. We've got a great budget and finance coordinator here who's kind of taken my hand and held it along the way, right, as we figured it out. But just being, I think having a willingness to learn is important. And then just being able to say, like, this is where we are, and this is where we need to go. What are the steps that we need to do to get there? And so you have to have an element of being able to think really pragmatically about the change and the progress that you need to see in your organization. And so I think those are kind of the big three for me. You have to have a passion. You have to have a great network of people to support you where your deficiencies exist.
Right.
And then you need to be able to kind of set a course of where you want to go and lay out the action steps to get there.
All right. So final question is the things that quotes you live by, things that motivate you, something like that inspires you. Do you have something that comes to mind?
I do, yeah. There's a quote that I actually have hanging above my couch in my house, and it says, "Life is not a path of coincidence, happenstance, or luck, but rather an unexplainable, meticulously charted course for one to touch the lives of others and make a difference in the world." Huh? And so I think it's just really affirming that, like, you're where you're meant to be when you're there, and so it doesn't make a lot of sense to you, but there's a greater plan out there for you to impact and make a difference in the world.
Amen.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes, sir.
I have to replay that one.
Yeah, I'll take a picture of it and send it to you.
Amen.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, doing great things.
Thank you.
And I just love being able to be part of the certain times and see the kids and, you know that there's a good future out there, right?
Yeah, we certainly appreciate you.
Going to make a difference.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for spending
time
with
me. Yeah, you bet. Thanks for coming by, Daniel.
All right. God bless everyone.
And that takes us to our next break. But, of course, stay tuned. We'll head north to meet a chapter in Wisconsin. That's just ahead on Rural Radio 147, Sirius XM. Well, thanks for tuning in. And finally today, Marshfield Community Television's Chapter Chat program in Marshfield, Wisconsin, sits down with members of the Stratford FFA chapter to find out how the activities they're doing now are shaping their futures.
Joining us today, we have members of the Stratford FFA. Becky Workus is here with some of her chapter members. We'll start off with Lexi Osman. Lexi, so how'd you get involved in FFA?
I think one of the older FFA kids asked me one year if I wanted to do it. So, and then my older sister was in it before me, and I always helped out at the dairy breakfast.
So, as long as you're doing her work, you might as well join it, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Justin Briggs also with us. Justin is a freshman, and how did you get involved in FFA?
I got involved because my father, my brother, and my grandfather were all in FFA, so just kind of ran in the family.
A heritage. All right, and then we've got Tristan Workus here with us, and Tristan has been in the FFA all of his life.
Yeah, pretty much.
Becky's son. Tell us how you got involved.
Well, I don't think it's too much of a surprise, but yeah, parental guidance, I guess you could call it.
That's a good choice of words. Lexi, tell us a bit about the greenhouse. A lot of FFA chapters have them, but they vary greatly. What's yours like?
Well, we have a wide variety of plants in there. We just recently had our plant sale.
So now what's planted in it now?
We have the flowers in like the main part.
Okay.
And then in the high tunnel, we grow different vegetables in there.
All right. Do you use the high tunnel all through the summer then?
Yeah.
And now what are the vegetables? You use those in the school lunch program, don't you?
Yeah, so our high tunnel right now, we just started planting vegetables in there, the horticulture class and the exploratory egg science class. And so in spring, we do cool weather crops in there like cabbage and broccoli, cauliflower. And then throughout the spring, summer, and the fall, we have plants in there, but it's not heated, so we don't have stuff in there during the winter, obviously. And then in our raised beds, we have three raised beds right next to our greenhouse, too. We have plants growing in there already. We transplanted tomatoes and cabbages out there this last weekend. In the greenhouse, we also have hydroponics lettuce set up too. So we've been harvesting romaine lettuce and putting that in the school lunch line as well. Actually, Justin and Tristan were two of the students who helped build the beds. And then they also, the two of them together as middle schoolers, assembled a, we call it the tool sharing shed. So the chapter purchased this little shed, and they assembled it all and took it out there, and we staked it into the ground, and it's got a lock on it. And inside there are garden equipment like hoes and rakes and that kind of stuff, and then watering cans and that sort of thing.
Tristan, along with the community gardens, you're on the tree advisory board. Talk about that.
So it's a committee, a village committee, that I serve as a member on, and we meet about once a month or once every 2 months, and we talk about how we can help make our town a better place for trees and just plants as a broader experience to just help them out with how they're living and.
So you're looking for places to plant trees where, hey, trees would be good here, or these need to be replaced, things like that?
Yeah, like which type of tree would work best with our climate and where we should plant trees. And then,
which is always intriguing me, because I mean, I just figure it's oak, maple, box elder. There's a few around here, but there's quite a variety that actually will grow in this area, aren't there?
Yeah.
So how do you decide which ones?
There's like a bunch of keys that we can look at and a lot of history that we can look at to help us decide that.
All right. And Lexi, you're talking a bit about some of the things that kind of tie into this in your community, and that you are part of the Adopt a Highway program, and you do a June Dairy Breakfast, a lot of things that are involved in Stratford. Tell us about the Dairy Breakfast.
Okay, so our Dairy Breakfast is the first Sunday in June. We have pancakes, sausage, then you get, like, obviously something to drink, and then we get applesauce and cheese curds and
lots of good dairy products, ice cream, milk, Smith Brothers sausage, which is always a big hit. And then we also have a farm tour of Maple Ridge Dairy. So once you're done with the breakfast, you can drive over to Maple Ridge, and they'll give you a farm tour of their farm setup as
which is one of the larger dairy farms in the area. So.
Yes. In the past, too, we've had Nighthawk Dairy, too, has done farm tours for us, too. So it's a great tie to let consumers know where their food comes from, because not as many people are up close and personal with the dairy industry anymore, and especially right now, that's an important tie for people to understand.
Jacob, talk a bit about what do you run into in the hallways at school from the unsuspecting public, from the kids who aren't aware of what the food production system is like out there?
I guess it's just surprised how much they don't know. I know there's a survey in Chicago, and they asked people, where did the milk come from? And they said the store, because they don't know that there's cows and farms behind that. It's just surprising that people just don't know where all their food comes from.
And this is a challenge that you're going to face as you grow older. But, we don't have to worry about this anymore. But what do you see as a way for you as an agriculturalist to present that in the future, to let these people know that this is important, this is where your food comes from?
On our farm, we kind of want people to visit. And whenever someone wants to visit our farm, we always say, come anytime, because we want to show them that, we treat our animals great, and this is where your food comes from. We explain the whole process of, where the milk comes from to how it goes to the cheese plant.
And you brought up an important point, and that is animal welfare, that how you treat your animals, that makes a big difference to you guys, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, because a lot of people don't think we treat our animals good, but, if people went on the farm, they'd see our animals love us just as much as we love them.
You know their names, you know their heritage, which ones are good and which ones aren't. Becky, talk a bit about, and we've talked about this before, about how your program is so involved in the community, and this is something that you've really amplified in your chapter, Rob.
I don't know. I guess agriculture is a great content area to jump in with both feet and just help students develop leadership. Leadership skills. And every summer, the high school officers have a officer training that we do. We spend a couple of days bonding as a team. And so these guys as officers get together and they say, what do we see in our community as needs? What do we want to be in charge of? Where do they want to make their impact? And then they actually drive. It's very student driven. They actually drive the program that we do. And of course, as middle schoolers, if they were umbrella group leaders for Safety Day and they got to see the high schoolers presenting, grain safety or outdoor safety or chemical safety, safety, and they're like, that's cool. When I'm in high school, I want to be able to present that station. So they kind of keep these programs going because they've been around them from the time they were middle school up, and they saw what the high schoolers were doing in their leadership skills, and then they wanted to emulate that as well.
Lexi, talk about school, the safety day that you guys put on.
Okay, so safety day we do every spring with the fifth graders, and we take them down to the park, and we have separate stations set up to teach the fifth graders, of course, how to be safe throughout the summer, because they're going into middle school and now they're going to be out babysitting, they're going to be going to their friend's house. They're not going to have as much supervision as they typically had earlier on. So we teach them anything from bike safety to fire safety to tractor safety, even some hunter safety is thrown in there too. It's really interesting to see and hear some of the kids ask different questions because they really like to learn about all that stuff.
They're sponges at that age, aren't they? They really do. Yeah. Lexi, we talked about, you know, when you first got involved in FFA. Okay, so most join your CHAP now as seventh graders, right? That's when they get into the ag classrooms. How do you convince a seventh grader that you need to be in the Stratford FFA?
Well, typically they will take an agricultural class, or sometimes they will see the different events we do and they want to go, oh, I want to do that, or I want to be like that person when I get older. I feel like a lot of our fellow officers are very good role models, and the younger kids look up to them. So once they are at that age where they can join FFA, I feel like they really want to do that.
Tristan, how about you? How do you get that across to a seventh grader that, hey, this is going to take you from the back of the classroom to the front of the classroom?
So some of the things that we do, we just basically show them what it means to be a good leader, and how good leaders can exceed above those who may not know what it means to be a good leader.
Becky, so where do you see your classroom 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Well, interesting thing, our school just had a big remodel, and I'm so thankful for this remodel. When I started in the classroom, I had basically a storage room, I had an office, and my four walls. That was when I started at Stratford, that was what we had. Well, since I've been there, we added a greenhouse, we added the raised beds, we added the high tunnel. Now with this remodel that we just had, I now have one part of my room is an actual food prep area. So we have three-stage sanitation sink, we have stove in there, sanitizer. So teaching students actually how to can, you know, pizza sauce and spaghetti sauce and those kinds of things. So when we take things out of the high tunnel, out of the raised beds, actually, now what? Now how do you process this? This is your food, you grew it, how do you process it? Then the other part of my room now has lab sinks, so we're doing agri-science experiments and those kinds of things. I have an animal lab, I have an aquaponics lab, so we have a saltwater tank in there for like the marine biology portion of it, but we're working on getting like a 400-gallon fish tank, so students have been doing water testing, even with the saltwater tank that we have. The students got to go through the whole process with me of applying for a fish farm license, because if you're going to raise fish in your classroom, you need a fish farm license. Yeah, so we pulled in the USDA part of that. So all of these new things that we've been able to add because of our new facilities, the students have been right there learning through the process of, okay, so if you were going to do this, if you're going to start your own aquaculture business, you have to apply for a fish farm license. So then with that, you have to go on the DNR website and figure out where your water is coming from and if you need a permit for that. So all these processes, I think it really helps students to see these are real-world problems.
Have you ever seen a time where there are such a great collection of opportunities out there for students coming out of your classroom?
I think right now there's such a demand for, good employees in agriculture who have the leadership skills, have the problem solving, have the critical thinking skills, and then another big important piece is have the drive. Like, students need to be self-motivated. And right now in agriculture, the sky is pretty much the limit. There are so many jobs available. When the guest speaker that I had in today was talking about even, in nutrition, in genetics, agronomy right now is a huge field. They can't fill those jobs fast enough. But you need to have people who are self-motivated, critical thinkers, who are problem solvers, who don't need someone to tell them, okay, do this next, and who really want to be out there solving problems.
Well, thanks for being here, guys. It was just great. Congratulations on continued success at Stratford and the program you've built up there, and continued success.
Well, thanks again to Marshfield Community Television for that interview. Well, that'll do it for this week's show, but if you have something that you'd like to share on the program or an idea for something that you'd like to hear about, just let us know. You can shoot us an email at ffatoday@ffa.org or give us a call, 855-RR-147. That's 855-776-6147. Until next week, I'm Janet Adkisson with FFA Today on Rural Radio 147, Sirius XM.